Welcome again to Seekers of Meaning, the podcast TV arm of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Adris. Thank you very, very much for joining us. If you would like to contact us, by the way, for any ideas for programming or comments, just email me at rabbiadris@jewishsacredaging.com. Check out the website, jewishsacredaging.com, the Facebook page, all the usual electronic social media, whatevers. But thank you again. The topic for today is something that a lot of people want to talk about, but somehow find it, they have to go do something else. But it is a subject that increasingly has become part of our conversation and our milieu as we grow older and we confront the realities of, to paraphrase Genesis 3, our own mortality. And to help guide us in something that's a very, very interesting idea, we welcome Rusty Roseman. Rusty is the author of Two Envelopes. This is what it looks like. Two Envelopes, subtitled What You Want Your Loved Ones to Know When You Die, which is in many cases a loaded question. But anyway, depends on what you really want them to know. Rusty, thank you. Welcome. Thank you for joining us on Secrets of Meaning. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me. I appreciate this.
No, it's a pleasure to speak with you. I enjoyed going through this. Very, very interesting. Would you call it a workbook or a manual? What would you call this?
Sefel. That's what I wanted. I wanted to call the book Sefel, but when you translate Sefel into English, it comes out satchel. So that didn't. So, but it is Sefel, and I take just a little exception to what you said, something that we all want to do. Nobody wants to do this. Nobody wants to talk about this. Nobody wants to think about it. I'll do it later. It's like cleaning the desk. I'll get to it. It is something that everybody should read and do. If you love your loved ones, your children, your friends, who's ever going to take care of things for you when you're gone, this is or you to give as a gift to them. Everything that's in this book gives them your desires, your instructions. It's your voice of what you want to happen when you die. It is 100,000,000% separate from a will and a trust. This is the sefel side, not the legal side.
So the why of doing this, What was the motivation? What was the aha moment for doing this?
I am one of four. I am not the oldest, and I'm not the boy. I was the one with my parents who, when they needed help, I was there every day. So I'm the one that knew what they wanted, how they wanted. But I'm also smart enough to know that everybody, once you hit your 40s, we're strong. We're raising our own families. We know what to do. Well, my parents wanted what they wanted, not what we wanted. My other siblings live out of state. Everybody has the culture that they live in and what they see, and they think that's the way everybody does it, but it's not. And I wanted my parents to have what they wanted, how they wanted. And we sat down and we talked, and we took care of all the things that are in this book. And my mother sat down and wrote and put it in an envelope. And then she called all of us together. The six of us were together. The first thing I did, and I said so in the book, is feed everybody because it's so emotional. It works better on a full tummy. And my parents shared what they wanted, not every specific because that was their choice, but what they wanted, where they wanted to be buried, who they wanted to be buried next to, because one is the child and the other is the in-law child. And it sounds silly, but my mother was very specific. And I made sure it was what my mother wanted. Rather than just let them open up one of the two graves my parents had, I told them which one to open when my first parent died. So that way, my parents had what they wanted, how they wanted. And as their child, I did what they said. It had nothing to do with what I wanted for me and for mine. As I always said to my mom, I was the legs of the operation. And everybody is entitled to what they want, how they want, about their own life and their death. And kids take over. I've seen it 100 times. And I had a conversation with a friend who told me her mom's in her 90s. Oh, we did all that. I don't have to read your book. I said, great. And she told me, well, her mom already has plots. And her mom told her she wanted this rabbi, but she told her she didn't want that rabbi. She wanted that rabbi. And I said to her, who's paying for this funeral? She said, well, my mom's money will pay for it. I said, why can't she have the rabbi that she wants? Oh, because my friend was invested in this rabbi, that her mother, but felt comfortable with that rabbi. It's the person who's dying, who will be dying, that gets to say what they want. And people don't think like that. I've seen it tons of times.
It's interesting because within the Jewish tradition, there is this concept of stewardship based upon the three repetitions of the fifth commandment in the Torah, honor and respect. And the concept of stewardship, which has been written up a lot, is that as the adult child has the obligation to fulfill the wishes of their parent, even if I disagree with what my parent wants, my job in honoring the fifth commandment is if they want this particular A, B, and C, my job is to fulfill that. So two envelopes.
Does not happen.
Believe me, if you lined up every rabbi in Detroit, and I know a bunch of them, and say, have you ever had one of these situations where the siblings on it, 100% of them will agree, oh yeah, I've had that, and let me tell you this story, and then somebody says, well, I can top that story.
And I've heard them. I've met with over 36 funeral directors of every denomination and no denomination, and the same story all day long. They sit in the funeral director's office and fight. Everybody fights. And that isn't what you want when your heart is broken. You don't want, first of all, there isn't a parent out there that doesn't want their children to always get along, especially when they're gone. And this book, it's your voice. Mom said, I want this. I was on a conversation with a gentleman who hasn't talked to his brother in 12 years because they fought about, and not Jewish, fought about what the father was going to wear when he was buried. And they fought about it, and not just a fight. And they haven't spoken in 12 years over what the gentleman was wearing when he was buried.
Now, I believe all of my colleagues have been there.
I know.
Believe me. The book, Two Envelopes. Right now, conversations about end of life are exploding all over.
Mm-hmm.
We just had another podcast a couple of weeks ago with another organization that has sprung up dealing with end-of-life issues. Obviously, it's because baby boomers have come to the conclusion, reluctantly, that we're going to die someday. And a lot, as you allude to, a lot of us don't want to deal with what we have maybe have seen in other families. What's the difference between this book and what literally are others that attempt to do the same thing?
The reason I called it Two Envelopes, and I broke it into two. The first envelope, I encourage you to write envelope number one, open immediately after I die. That talks about the funeral, the clothes, Shiva if you're Jewish, how to handle things with the luncheon afterwards if you're not, the washing. Different religions have different ways of doing it, but the children need to know ASAP. The second envelope, open immediately after the funeral, talks about things that the will and the trust don't. Perfect example. My parents had a grandfather clock. They had four children. Who gets the grandfather clock? To you? And we know that our parents, when they got married in the Depression, made a long list of someday we want to have. And the last thing they crossed off was the grandfather clock. So do you want four kids sitting there fighting over something that was quite sentimental to everybody? No. You want your kids to all get along. So my parents wrote out that we are giving the grandfather clock to so-and-so for these reasons. And everybody went, oh, okay. And it didn't mean that it wasn't emotional to everybody, but everybody understood. And that took away the angst between everybody. And with everything. And then my mother was very wise. She wrote, but she only had all in one envelope, if you don't like what I've given you, feel free to trade among yourselves or give it away or sell it, whatever you want. But this is what Daddy and I have chosen to give to you. And that took care of all of the emotions about, well, I wanted to pick that. You picked it first. It took that away because mom was talking and we listened. Not everybody will listen, but hopefully it will help a good majority, hopefully.
There's several variations on the family theme, as you well know.
Oh, yes.
There's two that I wanted to ask you about and how you would fit them into the two envelopes scenario. Number one is this really rapid growth in our community of what is called in the literature now solo agers. I have no family. I've never been married. I have no children. I don't know what to do. Who's going to take care of me? I have to do all this alone. The second scenario is the blended family where exactly what I'm talking about. Could you just talk about how the two envelope scenario applies to either of these two growing constituencies?
I purposely wrote what you want your loved ones to know when you die, not your children or your family. Because as you say, there's many people that don't have family. Some states, and I know Michigan where I live has, they have what they call a funeral representative who will handle all those things for you that is appointed and you go through your lawyer for that. A lot of people have very, very dear friends where they may have a relative of somebody that they've always enjoyed, a niece or a nephew of somebody that they've known their whole life and have high respect for. It's a difficult question. But in the Jewish world, you could also call Jewish Family Services because they could help, and so could the hospice, of directing you to people who have done this before, people who are legally able to do this, people you wouldn't be aware of in your regular life, but other people do know. Now, to talk about blended families, that's a really hot one, particularly if this one spouse loved their their first spouse and the spouse died and they buried them and then they married again and they were married for 30, 40 years. But the spouse that they married had divorced the person they didn't like. So where does this person get buried? You have two wives together, one on either side, but they only bought two graves. What do you do? I don't know the answer, but what I do know, it is definitely a discussion piece and with a trusted advisor. Be it a rabbi or a funeral director, but it needs to be discussed before anything happens, and especially in a non-emotional time. You know, when you're in hospice, it's not the greatest time to talk about these things. The time is when it's not an emergency. I had this with my husband. I said to him, we need to go buy plots. No, we don't. I said, oh, yes, we do, and back and forth. And finally, I said to him, and it's in the book, today is March 1st, giving you till May 30th and on May 31. And on June 1, I'm going to go buy plots. And on May 30th, he said to me, all right, I'm going to go with you. And he did. Well, I can tell you, I can name 8 people, all of whom are doctors and lawyers, said the exact same thing to their wife. No, I'm not going to do it. And they all ended up doing it. And all the women said the same thing. Well, I'm so relieved. That's one thing I don't have to worry about. And 2 of them who have children who aren't married, spoke to their children, this is Dad and I are going to go buy plots. Do you want us to buy plots for you too? And it opens up a thought that, well, I'm never going to die. But the reality of it, everybody knows it. And it becomes a matter-of-fact conversation rather than an emotional, hysterical one. And that's the purpose of the book, is that everything be done with logic. And of course it's emotional. I cried while I wrote it. And the best part of the two envelopes is they're in your house. They're not in a lawyer or somebody's office somewhere. When you want to change something, you go in the envelope, you take it out, you get rid of that paper, you write a new one, you date it, you initial it, put it in the envelope. Because we did our envelopes before we went on a very big trip. And thank God we came home from all right. But down the road, we may want to change a thing or two, especially if things change within our lives.
Right, right. Yeah.
It's in your house. The only thing I encourage people is do not put it where a caregiver, if you have such a person helping you, And like in your sack drawer and say, oh, what's this? And you don't want people going through your personal things. So find a thing, whether it's, you know, you put it behind a book or in a book or a photo album, wherever, a locked safe if you have in your house, whatever it is. But your children have to know where it is.
Right.
That's the key, that whomever you empower, they need to know where to find it. And you have to emphasize to them, you need to find this immediately after I die. And then it'll work for you.
The closing section, I guess that's the right way to talk about, of the book has these blank pieces of paper with a title on it for specific issues. And they're the things that you would expect until you get to the love letter. So I wrote it down. I had to ask you about the love letter page. Talk to me about that.
Well, the love letter page came right from Yaakov. It came right from him. I'm going to read it to you.
Yeah.
For the biblical partner Jacob died, he gathered his family around his bed to bless his family and to say goodbye. Well, lots of times, people don't have the opportunity to say goodbye. Sometimes the airlines don't make it in time. Sometimes somebody dies totally unexpectedly. But a love letter to your children tells them that this was, I love you. I loved you before you were born. I love you now. I may not have enjoyed everything you did in life, but you are mine and I love you. And that goes far. Everybody, I don't care how old you are, you were once a child and you want to know that your family loved you. And it really is quite an emotional moment. And I've done it twice with friends. And it breaks my heart. And one of my friends, she was such a bad way. And she called me and I knew it was her because I couldn't understand her. And I said, I'll be right over. And when I put my ear to her, she said, I can't write it. I said, I'll write it for you. So she told me what she wanted. And then she did as much writing of her name as she could. Her children treasure that. They treasure that their mother wrote them a note. And I wrote, Rusty was your mom's secretary.
Let's talk about estrangement, because estrangement is real. You alluded to a couple of scenarios before. In your experience with this, how have the two envelopes mitigated the estrangement? Have these two envelopes ever become a bridge to reconciliation?
One is a possible and two is a no, because everybody has their own right to dig in the sand if they so wish. I just came back from working with a relative on two envelopes, and she truly was an ostrich with her not wanting to deal with it at all. And I said to her, I've got good news and bad news. The good news, we're all well. The bad news is somebody's going to spend all your money coming to your city to figure it all out. They don't know who the attorney is. They don't know who you bank with. They don't know what it costs, you know, and the monthly charges where you live. And they're going to spend a fortune figuring it all out. And they're going to spend your fortune. And I went and I helped this person do it. And this person wanted no part of the above. But I said to this person, we are going to do it. You don't want to, but I don't care. You know, I came all this way to do this. And this is important, and we're going to do it. And then I'm going to go home, and you never have to talk to me again. Yeah. Well, the person said to me at the end, she appreciated very much, and she felt a whole lot better, even though she is alone, and she has some distant relatives, but she lives alone and alone in her city. But she felt a whole lot better. And I want to say one more thing. Everybody's really happy when they do the will and the trust with the lawyer. It is vitally important that people keep it updated. And by that, I mean, when you're working with the attorney, people write the durable power of attorney about the health. If it's not recent, semi-recent, 5 years or less, many medical facilities will not honor it. And this person that I went to help, hers was almost 20 years old.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't do her a bit of good. So
no.
Get all those conversations.
One of the workshops we do regularly is called Making Sacred Decisions at the End of Life, because we have in a book that we did a long time ago, and we walk through exactly what you're talking about. And It's amazing because we always say every 5 years at least, you need to take out the document because medical technology has changed. And what was, you know, experimental in 2015 is now in many cases standard operating procedure. But if you don't update it.
I had that experience when I took my dad to the hospital. The doctor said, and I talking about the sock drawer, I had sent to all my siblings his medical information because right. we lived in different cities. And if something happened there, and something did, and they ran for the envelope, but I had my envelope. And the doctor said, if this was not up to date, I could not honor it. And it has given me such solace that I did what, you know, it things weren't good, but that it was up to date and could do what my father wanted.
Yeah, and it changes. For example, you know, there these forms called pulse forms, which are physician's order for life-sustaining treatment, which supersedes the advanced directive because they're medical. They're in the chart. They're medical orders.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing how many people just say, well, I have an advanced directive and that's all I need. And you know, the doctor will be sitting on a panel, because I've done a million of these panels in synagogues, say, well, on the contrary, let me explain something to you.
What is that called? I don't know that word.
Pulse, P-O-L-S-T. It stands for Physician's Order for Life-Sustaining Treatment. In some states, it's a MOLST, Medical Order for Life-Sustaining Treatment. And it is actually sitting down with my doctor and saying, this is what I want. And the doctor writing it in the chart. Because as you allude to, in when you're talking, and also in the book, if you put these documents away someplace and nobody knows where they are, they're absolutely of no service. They're no good. You just have to make sure that people know where to go and where the information
is. I'd like
is.
To add something to what you just said, and that has to do with veterans. If veterans want their veteran honors, though, they need a copy of those papers to go in envelope number one.
Right.
Both of my parents died on a Friday, almost by Shabbos. They were buried on Sunday. There is no Veterans Association's going to open up to find papers if I needed them. So the kind of things that you need, you really, this is the time to do it because things take time. I ran into a situation, I'm still flabbergasted from it. A woman I spoke to in the middle of, I think she was in Nebraska, was beside herself because she wanted to cancel cable, and they required a birth certificate, a death certificate, and a marriage certificate. Well, she had the death certificate, she had the marriage certificate, but she didn't have a birth certificate. And it turned out her husband wasn't born in the state that they had lived all their lives. He was born in another state and came to that state when he was 6 months old. It took them 18 months to find out where he was born and to get the paperwork, to get it sent to her and certified and all the things you need in order for her to cancel that bill. And she paid on it for 18 months. So this is the kind of thing that you need seichel and go figure these things out ahead of time so you're not upset. And I'd also like to talk about Shiva for a moment because that is huge. When I sat down with the Jewish funeral directors, the fighting that goes on about that, and there's a lot. Then tell your children what is best in your heart for them. And I'm going to get personal here. My children don't live in Michigan. And I hope, and I'm in excellent health. My husband is, hopefully will live, you know, 100 the sponsor. But by then, everybody we know won't be. So I said to my children, if I'm under 90, stay 2 days. If I'm over 90, go home the second day, you know, after the funeral, you know, sit one night and then go home and you'll come back and do what you need to do. But go home. And I know they're both in the medical field and busy. I said, so you'll sit at night. And I said, what I care about is that you go to shul on Shabbos and say kaddish for the year. That matters to me. Rather than the 7 days, that matters to me. And I said so in writing. And so they both know that. And I'm satisfied. I'm satisfied. I'd love the 7 days. I'd love them to live here. You know, I'd love all that. But it isn't. So I deal with reality as well as the heart, and I put seichel to it.
Well, that's interesting because I just had this conversation again with somebody else a couple of weeks ago on the podcast about the distance, the mobility, and technology has so substantively changed Shiva. And a lot of people haven't really embraced the fact that you can fulfill the mitzvah, but in different ways. Because we're all not living like I grew up in, you know, the Jewish neighborhood in Philly, where sort of everything was compacted. There are no, those things are gone. And Detroit had the same thing, I know, from my friends.
Well, I gave my children permission. And that's the key to this book, is I am giving you permission. If my rabbi isn't there, pick another one. If my priest isn't there, pick another one. If this or that, it's okay by me. But you want to give your permission, which takes away that, did I do it right? Was dad happy? Did I do what mom wanted? Give permission. And that's what I did regarding Shiva, is I gave permission. Is it perfect that I want? No, but it's reality and it's respect.
So before we run out of time, I want to raise one issue with you that came up, has come up a couple of times in larger forums and conversations that we've been involved in Jewish Sacred Aging around end of life decision making and preparation and forms, etc. That has to do with the general rubric of technology and the specific issue of, in my envelope number 2, do I write down all the passwords?
No, you don't. What you do is you write where you can find the passwords. Because some people keep them on their computer. Some people will say, take a look, you know, in your bar mitzvah book or something. You can put them somewhere else, but tell your people where to find them.
Sure.
But I know, and I recommend highly, that people put it in something that you have, that your kids know, and when they come home, whether you've got a gorgeous display vase, everybody will find their own proper place to put it. And it's your own personal place. And that's a good place to put it. My children know where to find ours. We know where we did. Also, my husband did his envelopes. I did my envelopes. Because he has his opinion, I have my opinion. So I encourage people that you don't have to have the same thing. You can have what you want. Because guess who died? You. And it's your life. It's your death. It's your choice. And it's your voice. That's what the envelopes are, your voice.
So, Rusty Roseman, thank you for giving voice to, as you have pointed out, a very important and meaningful conversation amongst yourself, your friends, your family, most of all. 2 envelopes, subtitled, What You Want Your Loved Ones to Know When You Die, available with the usual suspects of where to get your books. Including Amazon, et cetera, et cetera. Rusty, thank you very, very much for joining
thank
us.
You.
Good
thank
luck.
You for having
me. And
Chag Sameach. And thank you so much.
You take care. You take
thank
care.
You. I will. Thank you.
To all of you, thank you very much for joining us on today's edition of Secrets of Meaning, the podcast TV arm of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. Again, if you want to make contact with us for ideas or suggestions, please feel free to email me at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. If you'd like to continue to support these podcasts and our work, please go to the website, jewishsacredaging.com. There's a conveniently located donate button. Just click on it and follow the prompts. We're very, very appreciative of your support. Likewise, if you'd like to be a sponsor to some of these podcasts, just email me again and we'll take it from there. A big shout out to Lubetkin Media on Cherry Hill, New Jersey, who is the producer, and our producer, Steve Lubetkin, the genius behind the control board. So thank you, Steve. To all of you, thank you very much for joining us again on today's edition of Secrets of Meaning. Till we meet again, take care of yourself, stay healthy, and most of all, be kind to one another. Shalom.